Welcome to Fun and Fundraising, everybody, the podcast where we talk with people behind top nonprofit galas and signature fundraising events to showcase how they positively transform their communities. I am your host, Rob Giardinelli, and today I'm really excited to have Kelsey Patterson on as a guest. Kelsey, along with her husband, Gary, and singer Leon Bridges, started an event and an organization and a foundation about 3 years ago called The Big Good. And it's quickly and immediately become one of the top events in North Texas and Fort Worth specifically on the nonprofit gala and fundraising circuit. And Kelsey is a wealth of knowledge and extremely knowledgeable about the nonprofit scene and supports lots of other nonprofits throughout Texas. So we're so excited to have Kelsey on as a guest. So Kelsey, welcome. And we're so excited to be here with you today.
Well, thank you, Rob. We're excited to talk about The Big Good today.
Absolutely. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. So tell us what the mission of The Big Good is.
So, the mission of The Big Good is really to assess the needs of our community and be a conduit and, a network for other nonprofits that are doing good work in the community or other organizations that need help. We don't see that we're in competition with anyone indirectly, directly or indirectly. Each year we partner with three organizations and we partner with them for 3 years. And then we raise funds for those nonprofits for 3 years so that really we can impact change within those organizations. A lot of times in our previous years before we rebranded as The Big Good, we were able to come in and give a grant, $10,000, $50,000, $75,000. But that one-time grant really wasn't able to move the needle within that organization. You know, if you need to hire staff, if you need operating dollars for a particular project, you know, that one-year influx of capital doesn't help you as much as knowing that you're going to be able to count on three years of funding.
You know, I'm really glad that you brought that part up because that's something I can't believe we've never really talked about it on the show in terms of the amounts of gifts that you do. Sustained gifts are always better than pops,
right?
Because sustained gifts allow you to plan. And, you know, there's organizations where, you know, they may get lightning in a bottle with a live auction 1 year and have someone with $500,000 and then they don't hear from them. And it's like, you know, would you rather have had that person give you $100,000 over 3 years,
yeah,
or would you rather have that all at once? It allows for better long-term planning. So I love how you do that, and you do it in an increment of time to allow the organizations to really gain that traction and really make that change. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a great model for us. I think we get a lot of synergy with the three beneficiaries that we've got. Right now we have three that we really kind of feel are building blocks on each other. We have United Community Centers, which is an after-school program. And, you know, they have children that come to the center and they focus on literacy and after-school care. We've got T3, which is Tarrant To and Through, which focuses on college and workforce readiness. And then the last one is really kind of a unique program here in Fort Worth. I don't know of any other shelter that's doing this, but the Presbyterian Night Shelter has a program where it's called Upspire. They actually manage a human resources department and find work for their clients. So they've got big contracts with waste management and with the city, and they manage all of their employment issues. They get them, the documentation that they need. They find them the work. They have the transportation to get them to work. And when they do that, they get paid time off. They get benefits. So it really helps them on their way to, becoming housed again.
You know, those are three really good organizations, and I like that they serve the community holistically, but they do it in kind of slightly different ways. You know, talk a little bit about how the organization and how you all go through the selection process in deciding, mm-hmm, I'm going to partner with these three organizations for a 3 year period.
Sure. So Gary and I had a foundation for about 15 or 20 years. Gary Patterson Foundation before we rebranded as The Big Good and brought Leon on board. And we focused a lot on family issues and education. That was near and dear to Gary, seeing as that he worked with athletes, in college, a lot of them coming from school districts that perhaps didn't prepare them as well as other school districts for college. So education was really important to Gary. So we worked on that for a long time. And when we migrated into The Big Good, we really did a lot of, we spent probably, 3 or 4 months interviewing. And we talked with Mayor Maddie Parker. We talked with the Eamon Carter Foundation here in Fort Worth. We talked with a number of other foundations to see who was doing really good work. Not necessarily, you know, the big organizations that everybody supports, but, you know, what are some people that are, you know, what are some organizations that are really doing great work affecting change in our community? So we got a list of probably 25 that, you know, here are the people who are, you know, affecting change in Fort Worth. And then we narrowed it down based on, you know, how we thought we could help those organizations best. And we took the list of about 10 or so to Leon and Gary and let them select. And they, you know, I think you are more engaged with your own philanthropy if it's something that you really care about. And so we wanted both Leon and Gary to be engaged with, you know, what they were doing. And so they selected the ones that, you know, appealed to them and they felt the greatest connection to. UCC is actually United Community Centers. Leon grew up going to the United Community Center here in Fort Worth. So that's a really personal connection for him. And then Gary and I, you know, having done so much work in education, really felt like T3 was doing great work with our, you know, with our high school students, getting them prepared for not just college, but for the workforce. And then Upspire is just, you know, I served on the board of the Presbyterian Night Shelter and learned really just an immense amount of information about, you know, the needs and the turmoils that come with being homeless. And so Upspire is a program that we really thought was a unique and, you know, really interesting program that we thought needed, you know, needed a little boost, needed a little bit more recognition and needed some help to kind of continue their work.
You know, I love that you are picking up, you know, up and coming organizations that they have it together and they have the tools and they have the building block. And, you know, and I know you've been on the Texas social scene for a long time, as have I. And, you know, what is big, what was big 10 years ago is not necessarily big now. Yeah. So I love that you all are taking this really forward looking vision to see, you know, what community gaps can we fill and we hold? And we know that they're going to be able to grow and really become a big organization that can impact a lot of change over time. So I really love the model and how you do that. And, you know, you had talked about your own foundation and how, you know, you all brought Leon in. So talk a little bit about what made you decide to do that pivot and how you all partnered and collaborated with Leon to do this jointly.
Yeah, we, as I mentioned, you know, Gary and I had been active in, you know, giving back to the community through the foundation for a number of years and really wanted to do more. We felt like we had hit, I don't want to say a ceiling, but, you know, we had hit, you know, our last 2 years of fundraising, we were raising, you know, between $250,000 and $400,000 a year and really wanted to take it to the next level. And we felt like we saw so much of an impact. You know, Gary uses his platform as, you know, a sports personality, a sports personality. And that generated a ton of support for our foundation. You know, maybe a lot of people who weren't involved in our causes got involved in our causes because of their interest in him. So we really felt like if we wanted to take it to the next level, we wanted to bring a partner on that could help expand our reach. And so, you know, obviously the first person that came to our mind was Leon. He's been such a, you know, dynamic. Well, first of all, his story is just fabulous. When he was coming along, Gary and I would hear, you know, whisperings around kind of the restaurant community about this young man who was this phenomenal singer and, you know, was on his way to making it big. And then finally, you know, played at the, I believe, Magnolia Motor Lounge one night and got discovered. And so really, it was a no-brainer for us to select Leon. He's young, you know, he touches a different demographic than we do. One of the things about Fort Worth, it's one of the fastest growing cities right now. And there's a lot of new donors coming into our city. And so we need to find a way to reach them. And, you know, I hate to say that Gary and I are getting, you know, a little above the target demographic, but we're a little above the target demographic in terms of age. And so really we saw a need to bring in this younger generation, not only of, you know, native, you know, Fort Worthians, but, you know, all of these new, this new influx of, you know, the populations coming to Fort Worth.
Wow. That's really cool how that, you know, how you were able to see that and you heard, you had heard about him in, you know, in the community, oh. And, you know, how he was involved with it.
Yes.
And he supports lots of causes. Like I've seen him perform at galas and other markets throughout Texas. Like he's always been very generous. And I love that, you know, you, you know, Gary, you and Gary are obviously a name, and, you know, Leon's obviously a name, but I love that you all are in different genres.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're able to come together and really create something amazing. So what advice would you give to somebody, you know, if they're looking to partner with another, you know, another person to really impact that change?
Yeah.
What should they look for?
You know, I think you need to look for someone who is doing it for the right reasons. You know, you hate to get involved with somebody who's not as passionate about your cause. You know, you kind of have to be, you know, equal footing. You know, you all have to be pulling the same direction and the same, you know, at the same pace, or it doesn't work. You kind of go around in circles. So, you know, we knew that we wanted to partner with somebody. What I love about partnering with Leon is that he's young and it's really so exciting. You know, as you said, Gary and I have kind of been, you know, going to, you know, these nonprofit, you know, charity events for years. It's so energizing to have this new energy, to have someone involved that for the first time, they're granting a check back to UCC, a community center that he went to. And it's a check for $250,000. And, you know, to see that impact him and to see what an impact he can have on his community was very touching for Gary and I. So part of it is really just, you know, the mentorship of teaching somebody, and I don't want to say teaching because he's, you know, he's got a handle on it, but, you know, being there to witness, you know, him kind of coming into his own in terms of, you know, giving back to the community and his involvement in philanthropy.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love that the multi-generational aspect of it, because it really does allow you to more broadly impact the community, but it also allows for kind of a wider, you know, a wider pool of donors. And before we get into that, I do want to touch upon that in a minute, but, you know, you mentioned something earlier I want to, touch on before we do that. And it's just, you know, you've been involved with the org, you know, with many nonprofits for years. So where does your passion about helping Fort Worth and the North Texas community, where does that come from? Where did that reside in you? And, you know, how, you know, what advice would you give to somebody who's wanting to get involved in their community? What's a good first step they can take?
You know, I think the first thing really is identifying what, you know, what pulls on your heartstrings. You know, for Gary and I, again, it goes back to the student athletes that we had at TCU. You know, we saw what a difference their communities make in supporting them both in college and before they get to college and after college, honestly. So, you know, that community involvement is, you know, really something that, you know, how do you give someone a leg up? How do you provide them with opportunities that maybe they weren't able to afford? You know, whether it's, you know, Boys and Girls Club or, you know, a little league baseball team or football, you know, flag football, you know, what are the experiences that, you know, a lot of kids get that they're not able to have? And so that's kind of where we started. And so I think first, if you want to get involved, you have to decide what, you know, what's tugging on your heartstrings. You know, in terms of why Gary and I, you know, love giving back to Fort Worth, you know, we got married. I'm from here. We got married here. He was, you know, employed at TCU for 25 years. So a majority of his life we spent here in Fort Worth. And so, and this is our home. I think Fort Worth has a really, you know, generous nature. Everybody really wants to see the city do better. I think that's something that, you know, is important to some of the, you know, older Fort Worth residents. And we all want to see that continue as our city grows. You know, we don't want to lose what makes Fort Worth so special as our city grows. So I think that's really why you see all of these different organizations coming together and supporting each other, is because we see the value of our combined efforts within our community. And it's, you know, I don't really feel like there's a lot of competition. I feel like we're all supporting each other and we want everybody to, you know, everybody to do well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love that you bring it up that it's not, you know, and especially, you know, with, you all and Gary having a sports background, you know, nonprofits, they always work best when they're interconnected and intertwined in some way, because, you know, certain nonprofits do certain services better. Yes, it makes sense for some nonprofits to combine sometimes, but there are certain things, especially if it's a wide enough thing, like say animal advocacy, for example, where there's going to be different lanes and different things, and to have kind of one organization do it doesn't make sense. But that whole network of things is just, it's really important for people to see that, you know, when one organization does well, we all do well. And that's what I love about the whole nonprofit space, is it's really that ethos that comes through. And I love how, you know, I love how you explain that.
Well, I think those are the organizations that are successful, is the ones that realize, you know, if we work together, we don't have to duplicate efforts. We don't, we can, you know, Camille and I have lots of, we just hired Camille as our full-time director of programming and fundraising. And she and I talk a lot about, you know, if we can't help an organization, you know, if they approach us and want to be involved, if we can't help them, we're going to set them up with the resources of people who can. You know, we want to be a network of good. You know, it sounds corny, but I think part of that came out of COVID, to be honest with you, is when we first started, we really sort of anticipated that we'd be a one event a year. COVID hit, and we found ourselves doing, instead of this big social event, you know, we were doing supply drives for the schools, and, you know, we were doing all of these little events around, you know, the community. And I think that really kind of gave us a good view for, you know, how interconnected we are and how important that work is, not just in, you know, funding those programs, but in connecting people, you know, being the connector for, hey, you need to talk to so-and-so. We're not the right organization for you right now, but, you know, we're talking with one right now that's a literacy program. And, you know, I'm not sure we're the right fit right now, but we might be in the future. But I want to connect them to the people who can help their, you know, their mission grow as well.
I love that you brought up that no doesn't mean no never. No may mean no, not right now, or no, but this is a better fit. You know, and all those things come into, you know, because people, you know, a lot of people take rejection, and especially with a nonprofit where it's close to your heart, you can take that rather personally. But no doesn't mean, no can be a good thing in that it may guide you to the right place. And I love how you give people the opportunity, and you will refer people to certain places, you know, based on what your needs are now and what their needs are now, and finding the perfect fit to allow that organization to grow. And, you know, I want to touch upon one thing that you were talking about in the, you know, in that answer, in terms of the smaller events you were doing during COVID, you know, and this is kind of a really good turn into the, you know, the big good itself, but talk a little bit about how those smaller events help you create that one great big event that you do with the big good every year.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you want to be careful that you don't try to be all things to all people. But you do need to diversify your, you know, your donor base. As our donor base ages out, we find that, you know, I think you start relying upon that same donor base. And if you're not, you know, if you're not engaging new donors, you know, your lifespan of the organization is dwindling. So, you know, I think it's those smaller events allow you to engage people that maybe, you know, haven't been involved with your organization, or maybe can't afford to be involved with your organization. It was really important to Gary and Leon that, you know, everyone knows that you raise the most money quickly by, you know, table sales. But a lot of times there are a lot of people who want to be involved with your organization who, you know, can't afford a $500 or $700 ticket to come to a party. So I think it's really important that you're cultivating that new, you know, the excitement for your organization, and you give them opportunities to participate that are maybe not, you know, that corporate sponsor level just yet. And that also brings an energy to your organization. It brings new people, new ideas. It keeps you from getting stagnant, I think. If you've always done things the same way, you know, it tends to get a little bit, you know, you have a shelf life.
You absolutely do. And that's, you know, and that's how I can always kind of tell the ones that, you know, the events that really do have staying power, they always find ways to, I don't want to say reinvent, that's the wrong word. Evolve might be a better word for that. They know what it takes to just you know, propel the organization forward. And especially when you're living in a state like Texas, where all the cities are growing so rapidly, you've got to kind of infuse, you know, you've got to kind of go, you've got to ride the wave a little bit in terms of what that is to stay, you know, to stay on top and to stay relevant and really impact the widest number, you know, widest range of people possible. Yeah. And that what I love about the Big Good is it's really unlike any other event in Fort Worth, in my opinion, just based on, you know, everything I've seen and known about it, in that, you know, you really do have some really good star power behind it. So what's and you know, you've got great auction. Like I remember last year's where you had the Taylor Sheridan Branch Bar experience.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really, really cool, you know, really cool thing. So what's a piece of advice that you would give to someone looking to engage a celebrity to be involved in their nonprofit event?
You know, I think a lot of it is, well, it's about relationships and patience. And again, finding the right fit. Everybody, you know, I don't think we haven't come across anybody that hasn't wanted to help. It's been a matter of, oh, you know, I can't do it because of timing, or, you know, or finding the right ask. You know, everybody wants to help, but I think you have to do a lot of, the other thing is you have to do a lot of the legwork for them, is that, you know, if you're asking and trying to engage a celebrity, they're very busy. It, you know, it's like Leon, we, you know, we schedule a lot of our stuff around his crazy schedule. And so that's really given us some insight into, you know, really how difficult it is to schedule people to do things. So I think being flexible, I think, you know, you have to come prepared. You're going to get a small window of their attention, or of their manager's attention, or their, you know, whoever it may be, the, you know, the contact for them. And so I think be prepared, and also do your homework into, you know, what have they supported in the past? What are they interested in? You know, make sure you know enough about them to make that ask.
You know, those are all really good points and really good advice, you know, and, you know, you bring up that one, they've got to be aware of the organization in some way. And two, you know, talking back to what you were talking about with the heartstrings, that the cause is relevant to them, because, you know, and I'm sure you've been to events over the years where, you know, a celebrity headliner comes in, but if it's not the right match and the right cause, it can fall flat. So I love how specific and deliberate you are with the intention. And again, it's more of a right, yes, right now, or not, or a no, not right now. And, you know, keeping that in mind, it allows you, you know, does that help you be like, okay, well, if they said no to this, but, oh, I've got this great idea for next year. So, cause I know that, yeah, you know, you're probably already planting the seeds for the no's now for the 2025 event.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's also about the return on investment that they see. You know, they're, if you're asked, like, for talent, if you're asking them to donate their time, and, you know, you need to know that they're giving up, you know, potentially a show that they could have done, or an appearance that they could have done. And if you can show them their return on investment, hey, if you do this, this is what our organization is going to, you know, how our organization's going to profit. The worst thing that you want to do is, as you said, is for that to not be successful. You hate for somebody, you know, I think sometimes, you know, events, our biggest fears are that we have this great package put together and you don't have the right bidders in the room, and the package goes for significantly less than you expected or that you had hoped. And then that celebrity, or, you know, that person is disappointed in the gift that they gave or the time that they donated. So really there's, you know, we talk about working it from the back end, is that, hey, let's go make asks, or let's look to see who's in the room and what their capabilities are and what would they be interested in. And go kind of solicit auction items that fit that. And I think that's something that you do as a smaller organization. You know, when you get to be a lot bigger, you know, you have a lot more donors in the room that perhaps you don't know their, you know, their capabilities. But when you're smaller, you want to make sure that nobody gets up there and is embarrassed, because, you know, if an artist donates a piece of artwork, you want them to feel really good about their donation. You want the person who bought it to feel really good about how much they paid. And you want that person to feel good enough to give you a donation again next year.
Absolutely. So I love how you walk through that process, especially with the auction process. And one is, you have one of the best auctioneers in Texas in Heath Hale, you know, commanding and leading the auction. But two, you know, you bring up a point that we've never really touched upon on this show before, and that is matching auction items that come in and being like, oh, I know that would be perfect for this donor. So
yeah,
what's a piece of advice you would give to somebody in terms of being able to be a good dot connector between understanding your donors and what, you know, what an auction package may bring?
Sometimes that's just throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks. I mean, honestly, there are some packages that I think this is the greatest package ever. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, generate the bids you thought. And then other times you put something up there and you think, oh, this is, you know, this is a $5,000 or $10,000 package. And all of a sudden you get the excitement in the room and, you know, it goes for crazy amounts. I think a lot of it has to do with the vibe that you generate in the room. You know, you think about why auctions, the best auctions that you've been to. The first year of our auction, really, we had just come out of COVID. It was the first year that we were doing our event. We really didn't know what to expect. And so we, you know, were cautiously optimistic. And then we got such a great vibe in the room and everybody was having so much fun that we were standing in the back of the room, you know, picking our jaws up off the floor because everybody was having such a great time and so excited about what we were doing in the community and so excited about the party that, you know, the energy just gets in the room and they start raising their paddle. So it's really, you know, I think first you have to know your donors, and that's for anything. That's for your corporate sponsorship. That's for, you know, table levels, auction items. You know, development is not a, you know, it's not a one time, hey, we're going to go call on, you know, American Airlines and, you know, we're going to, you know, get their sponsorship. It's, you know, a four or five meeting, getting that relationship and really getting to know each other. And I think that's the most important part in auction and in table sales is that you really have to know the people who you're, you know, who you're interacting with. And that's a year long process. That's those small events that you have. That's knowing, you know, keeping your list up to date to make sure that, you know about marriages and divorces and what's going on in everybody's life. You know, it's a lot of research in knowing who your audience is. And that's no different than any other, you know, that's no different than any, you know, product on the shelf is you have to know who your audience is.
Absolutely. That's completely true. And I like how you explain. I mean, I don't want to say keeping score, that's the wrong word, but you're aware of the holistic surroundings of what you're trying to create for your event. I think that's a tactful way to say it.
Well, I think, you know, the quickest way to lose a donor is to send an invite that's got an ex-wife's name on it instead of the new wife's name. Or, you know, a name, misspelled name is really, you know, I grew up having my name misspelled a lot, and names are important.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, it's the little things that sometimes lose you donors.
Absolutely. And the little thing, you know, what I love about the Big Good is you pay attention to those fine details, but you also talked about something in your answer you just gave about, you know, creating a vibe. And one thing that I have really appreciated coming out of COVID in particular is that you do not have to be in black tie anymore to raise seven figures. And how do you think the casual, because, you know, the thing about the Big Good is everyone's dressed really nicely, but it is a casual chic vibe.
Yeah.
And how do you think that casual chic vibe really works to your benefit and allows you to, you know, raise more funds?
Well, I don't know about you, but Gary hates getting in a tux. And it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a production. Yeah. I think, you know, there are several organizations that were doing it long before COVID, but I think COVID really changed people's attitudes towards, you know, how they're going out. You know, we have more casual work days. And I think, you know, really the ability to get dressed up, put something fun on and go to a party and not, you know, not be in a corseted dress or now I love those parties too.
I do too.
But I think, you know, there's a market for both. And, you know, the ability to go and have fun and, you know, put your boots on, you know, if you're in Texas, put your boots on and go dance and have a good time with your friends and let your hair down a little bit. You know, I think really, especially after COVID has been, you know, really successful and really popular with a lot of events.
I completely agree with that. And it's fun and it's refreshing. For me, it's refreshing to see because it's just, it allows for just like you were saying, it allows for more variety. It allows you to dress up when you want to, and it allows you to kind of be a little bit more, especially when it's really hot, you know, you kind of want those, you know, and, you know, we've all been in those things where, you know, you're in black tie and it's 98 out and that's, you know, that's not fun, but, you know, being a casual chic would be a little more fun. So thank you for sharing that. So, you know, talk a little bit about what guests can expect at this year's Big Good.
So, you know, we're keeping a lot of it a surprise so far, but what we really aim for every year is really a unique experience, something that you're not going to get anywhere else. We want to, you know, as a nonprofit, we're very serious about managing our budget. I just read a great book, Unreasonable Hospitality. I don't know if you've read it. It's really good, but they talk about how organizations, you know, you manage 95% of your money really well down to the penny, and then 5% of it, you just blow foolishly. So I think, you know, we want everybody to know that as a nonprofit, we want to be very responsible with our dollars. I worked in development. I worked on the corporate side where we were sponsoring events, and I worked in special events. And so, you know, I've seen events that really, you know, they don't make any money because they spend all their money on creating this fabulous experience. We really want to, you know, capitalize upon the relationships that we have so that we can provide a great experience while the donors and the attendees still know that, you know, a good portion of their money is going back to the beneficiaries that we support. But then there's that 5% where you say, hey, we're going to really go all out and provide you with something really exciting. You know, so I think this year they can expect, you know, a fun evening, similar to the past 2 years, but different. Every year, you know, we were really surprised at how quick the Big Good took off. So we're, as I said, we just hired a full-time staff member to help us. And she's doing a great job in engaging our donors and coming up with some really fabulous ideas. So we're still in the planning stages, but I think they can expect, you know, another exciting and fun year.
I'm glad you brought up something there about, you know, taking off, and especially if you've got your goal and then you've got your stretch goal. And then when it goes beyond the stretch goal, that just kind of takes your brain into a whole other space. What advice would you give to someone who ever winds up in that situation to kind of where it's beyond your best case scenario? What advice would you give to them just to kind of steward the growth of their organization, you know, in a healthy way?
Yeah, that really is something that we experienced the past 2 years, is that we were all surprised at how well we did. I think you need to come back and, you know, I'm kind of a cynic and a worst case scenario person. And so I would say that, you know, I'm always looking for what did we do wrong and what can we do better. After our event this year and last year, we surveyed, you know, we had meetings and with a lot of our attendees and said, what did you like? What did we do wrong? What, you know, what can we do better, or what would you do? So we're constantly evolving, you know, being an organization that's only 3 years old, we're excited about the future. There's lots of different things that we can do. But you have to also not, as I said before, not be too many things to too many people. Don't stray from what makes you special. And I think what makes our event special is that we really want you to feel welcomed. We want you to feel like, you know, we're welcoming you into our event. We want to know you. We want to have a relationship with you beyond one evening a year. And I think that's what makes it special, is that, you know, again, it's those little touches in making sure that we know who our audience is.
Wow, that's great. Thank you for that answer. And, you know, knowing who your audience is, and I'm going to ask this of you because you've been an audience member, and this will be our last question. You've been an audience member at a lot of different galas and nonprofits. What is one thing that all good, really, truly good galas and fundraisers have in common?
I think it's knowing the individual donor and adjusting to different individual donors. One of the things that we've seen happen recently is there's a change in donor dynamics. You know, there are some people who want to hold their paddle up and want people to know that they're bidding $100,000 or $200,000 on a package. And there are some people who don't want to be known, and you really have to adjust to that. I think social media and, you know, things are so customized now that people are used to being catered to. And so it's important that you know their name. It's important that when they come in, your staff knows who they are, that, you know, everything is customized to the person. And that makes it so much harder because, you know, when you have a big event, when you've got 400 people, that's a lot of work to make sure that you know everybody's name and everybody feels special. That's hard. And I think that's the good fundraisers know that. Good fundraisers know that there's no one size fits all solution.
That's the perfect mic drop answer, you know, to bring Leon, to bring Leon in at the end of the performance there. That is the, that is the perfect answer. And I think that's just, that's really great food for thought for, you know, people to just kind of realize is, you know, we are in a world of custom experience and just making everyone feel welcome. And, you know, I'm so proud of you all for your success. I know you've been involved on the social scene for such a long time. So for you to really be able to do that and really be able to help Fort Worth, you know, as it grows and really find good organizations to partner with, I think is really inspiring for people that are listening, not just in Texas, but beyond. So Kelsey, thank you so much again for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for allowing us to talk about what we're doing in Fort Worth. I really appreciate your interest and you know, talking with you today.
Absolutely. And the Big Good will be held on April 4th, 2024 in Fort Worth, Texas. For more information, please visit thebiggood.org. And that will do it for this episode of Fun and Fundraising. I'm your host, Rob Giardinelli, reminding you to keep it fun, keep it interesting, and your guests will have a great time. Have a great day, everyone, and take care.